Welcome to Torah Yemecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Lynn Kraft, and today we will be learning Malachim Bet, Perek Yud Aleph, Chapter 11. In the last Perek, Perek Yud, Chapter 10, we learned of Yehu's rebellion against and the destruction of the dynasty of Ahav. In Malchut Yisrael, Yehu's revolt and assassination of Yehoram, the king of Yisrael, led to his, meaning Yehu's, ascension to the throne. But in Malchut Yehuda, after Yehu assassinated Ahaziyahu Melech Yehuda and killed off 42 members of his family, there was a power vacuum, because there was no one else in line to immediately take the throne. And so, in Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, we're told that as soon as Ataliah, who was Ahaziyahu's mother and the daughter of Ahav, as soon as she saw that her son was killed, she took advantage of the situation and seized the throne. Ve'Ataliah im Ahaziyahu ra'ata kimeit bena. And Ataliah, the mother of Ahaziyahu, saw that her son died. Ve'takam v'ta'abed kol zera hamamlacha. And she got up and destroyed all the royal offspring. So in order to secure her monarchy, Ataliah killed off anyone who could potentially claim the throne in the future, which means that she murdered her own children and grandchildren in order to become queen. How could someone do that? Rav Steinsaltz explains that Ataliah had a very strong personality, as was evident from her negative influence upon her husband and her son when they were alive and when they were both reigning themselves. But now it's become clear that she wasn't just a strong personality. She also had an obsessive drive for power. So much so that she was willing to kill her own family in order to consolidate her power and secure her throne. In fact, Rav Steinsaltz points out that Ataliah's six-year rule didn't even seem to involve any serious political or religious changes. Rather, her monarchy was driven and defined only by her desire for power. This story of Ataliah seizing the throne demonstrates how the Phoenician value of absolute monarchy, the resultant killing anyone who stands in the way of the throne, have now unfortunately seeped not only into Malchut Yisrael because of the influence of Yisrael, who was a Phoenician princess, but also into Malchut Yehuda as well, through its alliance through marriage with the dynasty of Ahav and Yisrael. Ataliah was actually not considered a legitimate monarch for two reasons. First of all, she was female, right? When the Torah commands us to appoint a king once we enter Eretz Yisrael, the Pasuk in Devarim Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Tetvav, chapter 17, verse 15 says, Som tasim alach ha-melach, you shall surely place upon yourself a king. And Chazal, in the Sifri on that Pasuk, interpret that to mean melach velo malka, a king and not a queen. And the Rambam actually codifies this interpretation as relevant l'halacha, which means that it is practically practical Jewish law that a woman is not allowed to be anointed as queen. And second, Ataliah was not a descendant of David HaMelech, right? This was Malchut Yehuda, which needed to be ruled by Malchut Beit David, by a king from the Davidic dynasty. But Ataliah was the daughter of Ahav from Malchut Yisrael. She had no blood connection to Malchut Beit David herself, right? She had married into the dynasty, but she didn't represent a continuation of that dynasty. And so Ataliah's lack of legitimacy as a Jewish monarch is likely the reason why in the text, her reign is not introduced with the standard protocol used for all kings in Sefer Melachim. Usually, a king is introduced with the word Vayimloch, and he became king, followed by his name. Or Bishnat X, in the year X of the king already ruling in one kingdom, Malach ruled another king, right? The name of the other king of the other kingdom. In fact, Ataliah is not called a Malka even once in the text, and that's probably because she was an illegitimate monarch, so she's treated like one. Her reign is actually only discussed, it seems, in order to provide a context for her grandson's ultimate rise to power, which actually begins in the next Pasuk, Pasuk Bet, verse 2. We're first introduced, though, to Yehosheva, who is the daughter of Yehoram Melech Yehuda, and the sister of Ahaziyahu Melech Yehuda, assumedly though not the daughter of Yehoram's wife Ataliah, who has just seized the throne because she's acting against her, but rather she must have been a daughter of another one of Yehoram's wives. And in Divrei HaYamim, Perek Chaf Bet Pasuk Yud Aleph, in chapter 22, verse 11, we're told that Yehosheva was married to Yehoyada, the Kohen Gadol at the time. And we're told in Pasuk Bet, coming back to Sefer Melachim, that Yehosheva whisked away Ahaziyahu's youngest son, Yoash, who was still a baby, along with his wet nurse, before Ataliah could kill him, the way that she did the rest of his brothers. And Yehosheva hid Yoash and his wet nurse from Ataliah by having them live in the Beit HaMetash, under the watch of her husband, Yehoyada the Kohen Gadol. And it's likely that Yehosheva chose the Beit HaMetash as the ultimate hiding place, since she knew that Ataliah would never go there, because she didn't worship Hashem, she worshipped the Baal instead. In Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, we're told that Yoash lived in hiding in the Beit HaMikdash for 6 years, while Ataliah ruled over Malchut Yehuda. And then, In Psukim Dalet through Yud Bet, in verses 4 through 12, we're told that in the seventh year, Yehoyada Kohen Gadol staged a revolution against Italia in the courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash. And after assigning different watchmen to go to different areas of the Beit HaMikdash with different weapons to ensure Yoash's safety, we're told in Pasuk Yud Bet, in verse 12, Vayotze et Ben HaMelech, and he brought out the son of the king, Vayitain Alav et HaNezer ve'et HaIdur, and he put upon him the crown and the testimony. Vayamlichu oto vayimshachuhu. And they coronated him and anointed him. Vayaku chaf vayomru yichi hamelach. And they clapped their hands and said, long live the king. In Psukim Yud Gimel through Yud Dalet, verses 13 to 14, Atalia heard the commotion coming from the courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash. Remember, the palace was not that far, right? It was just down the hill in Ir David. And so she heard the commotion from her palace, and so she went up to the Beit HaMikdash just to see what was going on. When she arrived, she saw her young grandson up on the podium, and the officers and the trumpets and the nation was all happy. And she responded, we're told, Vatikra Atalia et begadeha, and Atalia tore her clothing. Vatikra kesher, kesher, and she called out, treason, treason. In Psukim Tevav through Tetzayin, in verses 15 to 16, Yehoyada then commanded his officers to remove Atalia from the Beit HaMikdash so that she wouldn't be killed in the Beit HaMikdash itself. Right? Since death is the ultimate form of tumah, impurity, there can't be a dead body in the Beit HaMikdash because everything and everyone is required to be tahor, or pure, in the Beit HaMikdash for their encounter with Hashem. So the officers removed Atalia from the vicinity of the Beit HaMikdash and killed her closer to the royal palace. In Pasuk Yud Zayin, in verse 17, Yehoyada followed up his political revolt with a spiritual revolution. Ve'yichrot Yehoyada et habrit ben Hashem u'ben ha'melech u'ben ha'am. Yehoyada made a covenant between Hashem and the king and the people, li'yot la'am la'Hashem, that they would be a nation for Hashem, u'ben ha'melech u'ben ha'am, and between the king and between the people. And in Pasuk Yudchet, in verse 18, in honor of this new brit between them and Hashem, the nation went to the temple of the Baal and destroyed its altars, thoroughly broke its images, and killed its priest. And then, Vayasem HaKohen Pigudot al Beit Hashem, the Kohen appointed officers over the house of Hashem, meaning the Beit HaMikdash. And through all these actions, Yehoyada effectively destroyed the elements of Baal worship that had infiltrated Malchut Yehuda under the influence of the dynasty of Ahav. During the reigns of Yehoram, Ahav's son-in-law, Ahaziahu, Ahav's grandson, and Atalia, Ahav's daughter. And he was able to restore Avodat Hashem, the service of Hashem, throughout the entire kingdom. The revolution concluded in Pasuk Yutet, verse 19, when everyone gathered together under Yehoyada's leadership, and Vayuridu et HaMelech miBeit Hashem, they brought the king down from the house of Hashem, Vayavo'u derech sha'ar haratzim Beit HaMelech, and they came the way of the gate of the royal bodyguards to the king's palace, Vayashev al kisei hamalachim, and he sat on the throne of the kings. And the parak concludes in his final pasuk, pasuk chaf, verse 20, Vayismach kol ama aretz, and the entire nation of the land was happy. Vayir shakata, and the city was quiet. Ve'et Atalia himitu b'cherev beit hamelach, and Atalia they killed by the sword of the king's palace. But wait, didn't we already know that Atalia was killed? Why is her death being described again? So the Parshanim discuss this. The Surah David explains that Atalia had been killed, in fact, in the previous pasuk in which we learned it, in pasuk Tet Zion, in verse 16, but that had Atalia still been alive, she would have instigated war upon the ascension of her grandson Yoash to the throne. And so perhaps that's why Atalia's death is repeated here. Not because it happened now, because it really did happen earlier in pasuk Tet Zion, but rather because it was the reason for the current quiet in the city of Yerushalayim. Remember the pasuk said, Ir Shakata, and the city was quiet, and we're being told right afterwards that Atalia was killed because despite the revolution led by Yehoyada, right, things were quiet because Atalia had been killed. The Malvim suggests alternatively that Atalia actually was killed now in our Pasuk, that the mention of her death in Pasuk Tet Zayin in verse 16 was really just the first step of her, in her demise, when she was made into a goses, which is actually the status of a person who's about to die, right? They're probably going to die imminently. They're called a goses. And that was her status in Pasuk Tet Zayin. But now in verse 16, but now in our Pasuk, they finalized her death, and it was finalized according to justice with the royal sword, since the law is that someone guilty of treason is put to death by sword. So Just to summarize, Arpeiric began with an illegitimate monarch who laid claim to the throne even though she had no authority to do so, and now ends with the ascension of Yoash to the throne at the hands of Jehoiada the Kohen Gadol. Yoash was a male king who was a legitimate heir to the Davidic dynasty. And so when he became king, it actually represented a continuation of Malchut Beit David, the Davidic dynasty, in accordance with Hashem's Torah. And the people were extremely happy with this turn of events. As we know, Hashem must have been as well. In the next parak, we will continue learning about Yoash and his kingdom. This year is dedicated by Michelle Levine and Susan Schuster and their families in memory of their beloved mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother, Rebbetzin Gloria Leff, Goldes Tzivia Bat Baruch. Rebbetzin Leff was a highly regarded principal and Torah teacher, a master educator, whose deep love for teaching Torah inspired hundreds of students throughout her lifetime.